Blog Talk Radio.
Why must we feel our futures so uncertain? Why must we feel our presence is a burden? Living day to day off crumbs from the table. This dependency must end. I know that we are able to build a life
that's
moving.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Dear beloved brothers and sisters, Assalamu Alaikum. Thank you for joining us this morning for All Things Human. Alhamdulillah, I decided to play something that the sound quality is not what some might call primo, but the message is timely and important for us. And all you have to do is, those of you who've been around for a minute, just remember those fourth Sunday open quotes, hookups, close quotes. So that's, it's a nationally aired broadcast. But it's so rich, and of course, I invite you to think about the politics of the times right now within the Bilalian community and outside the Bilalian community. So, alhamdulillah, the message, I believe, is very clear, potent, and relevant, as always, mashallah. Alhamdulillah, thank you for joining us. So, it'll be a little more than an hour. Actually, the lecture is 3 hours, so given that the sound quality is not too painful to bear, because what happens is when you translate from one device to another device, sometimes sound quality gets lost in the translation. But hopefully, if that doesn't happen too severely, then we may wind up playing the entire 3 hours over the next couple of weeks, inshallah. All right? And so I'll say, having said that, it's like, if you know how to get to me and you say, okay, sound quality is too bad, don't try to reach me this morning, it ain't going to matter, because we are going to play an hour of it at least, inshallah, today. But if going forward you say, don't start with the second part next week, if that's your feeling, then go ahead and get to me the way you get to me, and I'll definitely consider it. All right. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh.
Quickly, what we see is the fact that the absence of people support and leader, involvement in the decision-making process in leadership is what has caused and contributed to the narrow views that are affecting our lives. So, dear beloved people, without any further ado, I'd like to bring on our leader, the leader that we hope you will listen to and evaluate on the basis of the merit and virtue of what he's saying. Imam Warasdeen Muhammad, peace be upon you. Assalamu alaikum.
Allahu Akbar. God is greatest. With the name Allah, most gracious, most compassionate, giving thanks and praise to him for life, for morality, and for guidance. Peace and blessings be upon the universal messenger prophet, upon all the righteous servants of God. Listeners in our WJPC radio audience, peace be unto you. Muslims of American Muslim Mission, assalamu alaikum. As I was coming here, I was thinking on the subject, the topic that we have chosen for today, and thinking on some comments that have been made recently on the problem of black people, as we call ourselves, or Bilalians, as Muslims prefer to be called, in America, that is. I decided that it might be helpful, before going into this topic, to mention this, what I consider to be helpful criticism. It was made by Colonel Gaddafi of Libya in his publication, one of his publications, put out under the title Green Book. I would much rather appreciate, explain for the sake of better self-image on our part his idea than to go into the racist idea, which says that we are inferior because there's something wrong with our nature, that we're genetically inferior. We know that that's a lot of bunk, so it's no need of going into that. The championship fight in South America says something about that theory. And we know how that turned out yesterday. Again, it was a victory for the black man over the white man. Now, we know they win battles just like we do. But when you put the two on equal footing, there's no way to tell how the battle is going to come out. It will not be determined by genes, and you can bet that. Colonel Gaddafi, who is not such a likable person in the world, I believe he has many admirers, but we hear more criticism of him than praise. Colonel Gaddafi of Libya, he pointed out something in the history, the social history of the African people. And he associated, or he based his idea or theory on the effect of climate, geography, geographic climate on the spirit of the African people. He reasoned quite much, very much like I reason myself, and that is that human beings don't really get up and go until they are pressed to do that. Human beings like to take it easy. That's a tendency in us, just to take it easy. And we don't really get up and go, that is, kick the dust up, unless we are pressed to do it. The climate in Africa, for most of the climate, for most part of that climate, is very conducive to relaxation. It's warm. Sometimes it's hot. But when it's hot, you don't want to rip and run. When it's hot, you want to relax. You want to cool off. So Colonel Gaddafi said that this climate has a lot to do with the inaction on the part of black nations, our African nations. I don't think in America we can explain our apathy and inaction in that language or in those terms, because it is not Florida everywhere in the United States. In the United States, we have cold weather and hot weather, changeable weather, extremes of all kinds. And if weather was a factor for influencing our social, political spirit, then we should be as aggressive here in the United States as the white man is. But it seems that we are not. So I hope that the nose will explain why we are not. The nose, N-O-S-E, the nose on your face. I chose the topic because I felt it was very, very effective in explaining our situation. The topic, how to get the ring of the carpetbagger politicians out of our noses. If there is no interest in the people, then you can expect nothing from that people. So maybe before going into the nose as a symbol affecting our behavior, maybe we should talk a little bit about our situation in hopes that all of us have an interest in changing an objectionable situation to an acceptable situation. You know, we have made progress and we have failed. On one side, we have made great progress, and on another side, we have great failures. We may charge these to the racial climate in America, are the remaining racist sentiments in the American Caucasian or white people. I don't like to use the term white. I don't like to use any color appellation for people. Simply because this is a tool for prejudicing people against each other. They may appear to you to be as white as snow, but I don't think that is a dignified classification for that race. That race has more dignity than skin pigmentation. And likewise, it is not respecting our dignity to constantly refer to us as black people. It does not only disrespect our dignity to refer to us as black people and not as human beings, or with a term that suggests a human content. When we use the term Belalian, it suggests a human content because Belal was a human being. The expression African, Mexican, even Asian, all of these expressions, all of these terms are connected with a human being or with human history, so they suggest the content of a human being. But when we say color, it suggests no human content. When we say white and black, it suggests no human content. And this language is not ours. It is the Caucasian slave master's language, who devised that kind of language to divide the world against itself so that they could take all the goodies from those fighting each other. Now, these are the simple facts. If you study race in social science, in political science, study race in the human sciences, and you will see that race, according to the scientists of the field of human sciences, race is was changed from cultural terms to color terms recently in the history, and that time is the time when they decided to cut up Africa and cut up Asia in the name of white supremacy. These are the facts. These are the facts. And when we buy that term, black, for ourselves, we are just following the pattern that was designed by the racists to destroy us. If my skin is black, I'm not ashamed of my skin. I accept my skin, and I think black skin is as beautiful as any other skin. I've seen black skins, I've seen the blackest of skins, and I've seen the whitest of skins. And I think the beauty is not in the color, but in something else. I've seen the ugliest people under whiteness, and I've seen the ugliest people under blackness. I have no objection. My mother was a black-skinned woman. My father was a light brown-skinned man. And I am a medium-skinned man. And I like the medium. I don't like the extreme. Well, getting back to our point now. When examining our situation, we see that we incline to give ourselves too much to certain motivational urges and tendencies and not keep our eyes on what is beneficial for us in the long run, not in the short run, in the long run. Because after all, it's beneficial for a hungry man to rob a bank in the short run, but it may mean the loss of his life in the long run. So we are not to make judgments that will affect our whole life on the basis of what is good for us or what is helpful in the short run. We are to do it on the basis of what is helpful and good for us in the long run. People who have thought that way have laughed while other people have gone down. Nations that think that way stand while other nations fall. Dear beloved people, I hope God bless us with guidance and understanding. I hope he bless me to be able to express my thoughts clearly to you. And I hope he bless you to receive my thoughts in the proper way. I don't intend any mockery. I don't intend any destructive criticism. So if you might hear that or feel that, please know that I don't intend that. Everything that I do and say is for the sake of improving upon us. We're going to talk a little bit about the nose as a symbol. I recall as a teenager being criticized by one of my teenage associates. He said to me, he said, "Wallace, that girl got you by the nose." You know, you heard the expression, got a ring in his nose. He said, "Wallace, that girl, she's got you by the nose." And when he said that, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I don't know why I got so upset, because I really was nose-directed for that girl. All right? But I got really upset, because to me, that expression said more than what he was saying. You've also heard the expression, nose dives. Nose dives. When a bird or a plane take a nose dive, they let everything go. They just let everything go. And I'm sure you're aware also of the association of the bull with a ring in his nose. They lead the bull around, big bad bull, with all of his muscles and power. But he's given to fits of rage, so they have to kind of teach him a lesson. And they found that the nose is one of his most tender spots. They put a ring in his nose, and the slightest pull on that ring make that big, powerful bull walk to the music. Well, what I'm trying to lead up to say is that we are pulled by the noses. And it's not good for us, because it limited our maneuverability, like the maneuverability or the freedom of a bull or cattle is limited. We have leadership in our popular leadership that is good and very good, excellent. But on the whole, I would have to say that our popular leadership plays psychology on our noses. Dear beloved people, nose as a symbol refers to our appetite-connected intelligence. You know, the nose is an intelligent organ in our sense makeup. The nose, when we are hungry, become more sensitive. When we are full, is less sensitive. When it's stopped up, it's less sensitive. And it's stopped up usually by a cold, is that right? A cold. Too much moisture in the nose gland. And the smelling is impaired. We've heard the expression, "I smell something." I smell something.
And again, we are people who have this nose problem. We are constantly being told that we smell something. And those who tell us that something is smelling hardly ever tell us where to find it and how to deal with it. They just tell us something is smelling. Now, I'm talking about carpetbag politicians. To understand the carpetbag, the term carpetbag, we only have to review the history of the Civil War and that small period, but sad period, wherein we see the northern opportunists coming from the north to a bad situation in the south and taking advantage of that bad situation by playing on the nose intelligence of the people at that particular time. Dear beloved people, if we examine the climate, the present climate, the present social and political climate in America today, we will find that the same kind of influences, the same kinds of sentiments, the same kind of emotional and motivational tendencies have formed again like they were formed in that period called Reconstruction under a Marshall Plan. Under the Marshall Plan, the victims were abused. The victims had to rub their nose in the dirt. Yes, we know. Those who have read the history, they know this. They understand. They were abused. Now, the sentiments in the abolitionists, and especially in the slaves, were certainly not of such form that they would be aware of the abuses that were being meted out by the northerners to the southerners who had been defeated. This is a kind of touchy situation, a kind of touchy page in history, but the hypocritical northern so-called abolitionists and civil rights leaders were not all good. Most of them were bad, brothers and sisters. A few of those people were good. Frederick Douglass was a good man. Abraham Lincoln was a good man. Many of the Quakers who helped us were good people. Well, I even believe John Brown, wasn't that the man named? John Brown, the fanatical crusader who risked his own life and ended up losing his life for our rights. I believe he was a good man. But there were many, many who were not good. There were many, many who were looking for an opportunity to take advantage of a confused situation. There was a lot of confusion during that period. And those opportunists from the north went down there to take advantage of a confused situation. And they were very, very fortunate to find the Beladian people or the African-American people who had just been liberated, dominated by nose intelligence. So they took advantage of the dominance of nose intelligence in those Belalians, in those African Americans at that time of Reconstruction, that sad page of martial rule, when the soldiers were forcing the Caucasian leadership of the South to yield and bend to their divisive scheme to brew and breed in the Caucasian hatred for their slaves, hatred for their liberated slaves, that would last for many, many years and centuries, so that there would never be a chance for the free slave to ever form a healthier, friendly alliance, a friendly cooperation with Caucasians of the South. The Northerners planned to keep the South divided. They planned to keep the South divided. Not divided as a part of the United States. No, they wanted it united with the United States. That's how come the war was fought, to unite the South with the rest of the United States. But they wanted it divided against itself on racial lines. So they came in during the period of Reconstruction, and they forced their will, set up their own governors from the North, their own petty governors from the North, over the Caucasian, who had a right to rule in his own land, in his own native land. He had a right to be the ruler there. And I'm sure they could have found some sensible Caucasian who could have exercised that responsibility there, but they didn't seek to find a Caucasian who could exercise that responsibility there. Their intention was to force blacks on Caucasians to deepen Caucasian hatred for blacks so that the South would never be united color-wise, but will always be divided color-wise, so that the North, the manufacturers, the commercial empire, would dominate the whole land. This is the evil of this country that we must understand and get our noses out of the grip of the carpetbagger politician. Today, what is the problem? It's the same thing. Today is the same thing. If the situation was normal here in the North, you would find Christian and Muslims embracing each other. Because my voice of Al-Islam is not the voice of religious dominance. My voice is not the voice of religious persecution. My voice is not the voice of religious superiority. My voice is the voice of religious unity. My voice is the voice of respect for Jews and Christians and Muslims. And if the climate was natural in this country, you would find more black preachers, African-American preachers, Belarian Christian preachers embracing me. I embrace them. I embrace them. If the word was spoken, if the truth was given, you would hear praises coming from my lips for Dr. King, who has passed, but also for the living. You will hear praises coming from my lips for Reverend Fauntroy, who is also a congressman, for Reverend Laurie, and for Reverend Jesse Jackson, and for many others. I don't stand up here and preach division to you. I preach unity to you. I don't ignore their contributions. I respect their contributions. I'm not afraid to say that we should work together. I speak out in the open and say that we should work together. But it seems that our popular leadership are afraid to get too close to us, and they don't want you to get too close to us. They have become prima donnas of the worst kind. Maybe they don't like to be seen standing side by side with a foot soldier. Maybe they think that I'm not of their caliber. Maybe they think that I don't have the credentials. If that's their attitude, then I don't want to get with them. Dear beloved people, the situation that we have requires a unity between nose sense and brain sense. The two should come together, and we shouldn't always try to exploit disunity to raise ourselves in the eyes of people. We should wake up one day and realize that that very tricky, low-life strategy is going to eventually bring us down. But we have that tendency. We don't think we can rise without pulling those taller than us down. That's a shameful way to rise, brothers and sisters. Our popular leadership problem or to hit it right on the nose, as they say. Is the fact that they are mentally and emotionally geared up like a drum major, striking the drum to the beat of social programs and ignoring the steps of social reform. Dear brothers and sisters, how long do you think the federal government can continue to increase revenue for social programs at the beat of the drum of these carpetbagger politicians who know how to strike to the beat of social programs but don't know how to step to the demands of social reform? Don't you know there's a natural law of social progress? There's a natural law of social progress, and that law says that morality and social progress form as a companion, as companions. They go together and they can't be separated. Now, to understand this, take a quick look at the general world picture. To see how social programs are faring in the general world picture. A look in that direction will help us see what's happening here. Dear beloved people, when we observe the function, the impact of social programs in the international scene, something comes out very plainly. Something reveals itself very clearly. There are countries in Africa that are trying to work the social program. Among those countries, few are succeeding. Few are even showing a good sense in that regard. The native country of President Kenneth Kaunda is one example of a good people and a good leader. And there are a few others. Countries, mostly from America. I think America is giving economic aid to, I believe, over 60 nations or more of the world. Now, dear people, among these nations that believe, that have tried to practice the principle of socialism, trying to advance their social program, we have alarming number who beat to the social program. They beat the drum to the demand for social aid, but they don't keep step with the demand for social reform. We find that they ignore the moral accompaniment. To social progress. Their leader is not held morally responsible. gets the aid into his hands and abuses it. Just like these welfare stations and these other programs in our cities get the aid and abuses it. Now, if we don't take the responsibility into our hands for the moral conduct of our social program, we will always be at the mercy of carpetbagger politicians who are only here temporarily. Their investment is short-term. They carry a carpet bag, and everything that they have is in that carpet bag. They don't plan on sitting up home for now and tomorrow. They don't plan on building up a house for themselves and their children to come. They're only looking for a fat check until they die as a fat pig. Dear beloved brothers and sisters, until we face these problems and deal with these problems intelligently and bring down leadership to our level. Don't you know leadership is not supposed to look to us from above? Leadership is supposed to look up to us. Yes, because leadership has to respect the will and the people that it's supposed to represent. And if I'm a leader that looks down to you, I don't have any respect for myself, and I don't know my place in your society. They are trying to tell us to live in houses with no light, live in houses with no sense of the blueprint of that house. We can't live like that. Why, houses have kitchens because people have to eat. But houses also have toilets and baths because people have to let out that's too much in them and that's not good for them. And people have to clean up after they become dirty. And houses also have recreational rooms. People have to have a break from the drudgery. Dear beloved people, this society does not give us a break unless it's an orgy in self-destruction. And it doesn't give us a bath unless it's with the pigs in the pig pen. And when they cook our food, they cook it with the toilet utensils. They bring the toilet utensils in the kitchen. They bring the toilet facilities into the kitchen. And we don't know whether we're eating out of the cooking pot or out of the spittoon. This is the problem. We have to establish a moral. And we have to understand that the passions of man climbed morally. The passions of man is an uphill climb along a moral highway. And if we don't travel upward, up a moral highway with our passions, we will never be anything but weaklings at the feet of power. Dear beloved people, these are the facts of our situation. Again, let us look at the character of our popular leadership. When election time draws near, most of them begin to skate and shuffle around, ripping and running and speaking on the issues that they have neglected for a whole year. They come out with face-saving, hypocritical support for issues that they should have been treating for the whole year. And their purpose is just to operate as an endorsement broker who will be paid for getting endorsement. They bargain with the candidate to see how much is going to come into their cooking pot. And the candidate that promises the most to their particular cooking pot, they will endorse him. When they have decided, then they come out and tell us, vote for Reagan. Vote for Reagan. Well, be true with you, I don't even want to tell you my choice. Because I fear that you may run with the fuel of the nose. I hope that in listening to me over the years, you can make the same choice that I'm going to make.
brothers and sisters. When hard-pressed to preserve the progressive character of ghetto morality from ego-related situation changes, little help comes down from popular leadership. Recent developments are encouraging, however. Recently, I've seen the Black Caucus members taking a greater role of responsibility, accepting into their view of factors in the situation, Africa, Nigeria, and the countries that now need our awareness. The president of Nigeria spoke to us and appealed to us to show at least as much interest in a growing economy of Nigeria as the Caucasians are showing. That was a criticism that came from a man who was acting like a papa to us. Dear beloved brothers and sisters, in concluding this hour of this address, I ask you to follow the voice of your own conscience, the voice of your own heart that calls you to truth and excellence. If that voice is the voice you hear from this speaker, from this imam, this leader of Al-Islam, imam simply means leader in the religion, then follow it and embrace it. And let us hold hands together and walk together. Let us live and struggle together. Let us survive together. Let us recognize that the survival instinct must move up a moral climb. A moral climb. The survival instinct will destroy us if it doesn't take the path of moral excellence. And we will be successful. Peace be unto you. As-salamu alaykum. Dear beloved brothers and sisters, we are grateful to Allah for the new exposure that we have by way of WJPC Radio. We should seek more of this exposure. It's a shame on the international Muslim world that there are international Jewish programs, international church programs, but no international Muslim program on television. I don't say it's a shame on us because we represent the underprivileged, disadvantaged, poor of America. I'm no rich man. I live on a poor level. My home is that of a poor man. My wardrobe is that of a poor man. My daily diet is that of a poor man. The only thing that gives me an image of middle class is your contributions that pay for my traveling, that pay for me to be free to function properly as your leader. But except for that, my living is that of a poor man. And even when I'm traveling, I don't take advantage of your nose. I don't go to California or somewhere and eat high on the cow. Or high on the lamb. Normally I order chicken or fish. Chicken or fish. Maybe a beef burger occasionally. Hardly ever a steak. Hardly ever a steak. And dear beloved people, I don't buy Stacey Adams shoes. If you've ever seen me with one, it was given to me by a hustler. And I got them as a gift or a great discount. In fact, I have a pair of Stacey Adams that was given to me by a hustler who told me, say, well, they're not bad. Say, these shoes are good. There's something irregular about them, but you can't find it by looking at them. I say, well, if I can't see it and it doesn't hurt my feet, give me the shoes, man. Now, if I ever learn that he's a thief, I'm going to take those shoes and beat his damn brains out. He told me he buys them from a wholesale distributor who distributes irregular shoes. That doesn't mean that you can't belong to this community if you live differently. If you got plenty of money, that's your money. My money that I make is not my money. A leader's money is his people's money. But if you're not the leader and you're making money, that's different. You're free to do with your money as you will. And the moral code of the Quran should help you decide, or should decide how you should handle your money. You are not to spend so much of it that you put yourself at the mercy of other people to pull you out of debt or to take care of you until you can get on your feet again. And you shouldn't hoard it or hold it so tight in your fist that you ignore the charity obligation on you as a human being and as a Muslim. So there's a brother named Jabir Muhammad. He used to be called Herbert Muhammad. He's son of the late leader Elijah Muhammad, and he's brother to a man called Waraduddin Muhammad. Now that man, he makes his own money, and he's not an imam. He doesn't claim to be the leader over a community. He makes his own money. It doesn't come from contributions to him. He makes his own money. And he rides around in cars that look like something I saw about 10 years ago in Buck Rogers' cartoon. He has spaceship limousines. But that's his business. That's his money. Now, I don't see in him any real problem, such as greed, because I notice he doesn't wear any flashy jewelry. I notice he doesn't wear expensive clothes. But he likes those Buck Rogers cars. And I understand he sleeps on raised cushions and eats high on the cow. One of our best members in this community. So don't think you have to look like a foot soldier to stay in our company. If you have justifications to look like the aristocrat, welcome, brother aristocrat, welcome. But don't forget the moral obligation in Al-Islam on your purse strings. Amen and hallelujah. Brother Jabir Muhammad doesn't forget that obligation. Why, he's almost constantly coming up to us, inquiring about our difficulties. And if he senses that there is a real crisis developing
developing in this community, he always go down in his pocket and come up with a healthy contribution. And even when we are not faced with any real serious crisis, because after all, his purse ain't big enough to pull this whole community up out of this crisis. But even when we are not faced with any real serious pressing demands here locally, he comes and makes a substantial contribution. Just a few weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, he made a $5,000 contribution to Claire Muhammad School here in Chicago. And I understand that he also made equal to that amount, I'm not sure because I didn't even inquire to show you how much I trust the treasurer. I haven't even asked him the figure for Brother Jabba's gift to the Zakat. But he also made a gift to the Zakat, and I'm sure it was $5,000 above. That also was a recent contribution. You might say, what is that? What is $5,000 contribution for the manager of Muhammad Ali, for the manager of Muhammad Ali, whose fight was $8 million, who fought for $8 million. You don't understand. When the Internal Revenue got through with that $8 million, when his bill that he created since he's been out of the ring comes and take a bite on that $8 million. When all of those people in his entourage and all of his non-profit making capital assets take a bite into that $8 million. And when legal liens, etc., take a bite, alimony, etc., take a bite into that $8 million. You may think twice about suffering as he suffered with home for that purse. His percentage, which has been greatly reduced, I understand, by a new contract. When he got his percentage, it wasn't what you think it was. And out of what he got, he has made these contributions to us. Don't you know there are only a few people who live on a middle class and upper middle class level in our community that gives any charity to us at all? Most of them don't give anything to us at all. For education, for anything. Dear beloved brothers and sisters, let's think about this. We have a brother here in Chicago who I consider not to be upper middle class, but he is a man who doesn't have to come to us for charity. He's not begging anybody for anything, all right? He's a worker. He works hard. He has a business. He works hard. This brother also contributes to us. And I would say his image, his significance as a donor here, his importance as a donor here is equal to Brother Jabber's. Why? Because Brother Jabber has much more to work with than that brother. But we can't ask of any man who is working for his bread, whether he's got a comfortable living or not, we can't ask him to give us as though we have first rights to his purse. That's wrong. He has first rights to his purse. Salvation is first on the person, then on his immediate dependents, and then it branches off to others who are not in his family. Is that right? Or to those who are not immediately dependent on him. So don't say he's rich. Look out! Look, he bought his son a car. He didn't buy the master the car. If he does that, great. But if he doesn't do it, you shouldn't have that attitude. Never love people. Brother Jabbers. You say, oh, he's campaigning for Brother Jabbers. No, I'm campaigning to get other people who are Jabbers to come up and do what Brother Jabbers is doing. Brother Jabbers told us last week. He said, if you all need a car limousine for the community, let me know. We don't have the right to demand him to do that. No, but he's doing it of his own accord. He did it of his own free will because he wants to see this community with prestige. He don't want me to look bad when people come here, dignitaries come here, who ride around with chauffeurs and big limousines, and I have to send my Ford out there to pick them up. I agree with his logic. I agree with his logic. I know this is national hookup time, and that's what we are. We're all national hookup, and you'll be hooked up pretty soon, I hope. Have patience. Look, dear brothers and sisters, our guests also have a right on us. If I receive guests, I can't impose my standards upon my guests. I have to tell my guests my standards and hope that the guests will tolerate my standards while they are my guests. But an intelligent, sophisticated host will try his best to reason with his guest standards. And if his guest comes from a comfortable palace, comes from where he doesn't see the coarse, uncouth mannerism of the uncultured people, I shouldn't invite that dignitary into an environment of coarse, uncouth, bad-mannered people. Unless I shape them up before he comes. Yes, unless I shape them up before he comes and warn them that if they misbehave in his presence, I'm going to beat them up after he leaves. Yes, this is intelligence. Develop people. And I shouldn't invite him to come from his accustomed life of riding around in limousines or in a comfortable, expensive car to ride in mines that may put him in the hospital. Yes! If I bring a dignitary who's used to riding around in these big comfortable cars and he ride in some of ours with no shocks, and he hit a slight pothole, he will have a back injury, a spinal injury, a neck injury that will cost him a few thousand dollars just to visit me. Look, as we broaden and heighten our association, we have to step up our community sophistication. We need a limousine. We need a limousine that no dignitary would be ashamed of. And when we go and get people of that kind of mind and that kind of a life, we should pick them up in that limousine. And the chauffeur should give them respect. He should say, yes, sir, no, sir. At your pleasure. What is your pleasure? Let me help you. Let me serve you. He should jump out of the car and open the door. they come out safely and close the door properly. He should go with their bags and get to the hotel door before they get there. He should tell the porter at the door that a special dignitary is coming in. Shape up or ship out.
We come, give you a lesson for your mind. If you just didn't listen, bring up the day, tell you about the time. Cause there wicked people in the world today, trying to take what God gave you, that is your mind. Come and shoot through the TV, come and shoot through the radio. Come and shoot through the movie screen, come and shoot through the TV. Come at you from the left and right. Come at you from behind. Trying to take what God gave you. That is your mind. That's why we stand fight.
Oh, what's that?
Come on and fight, yeah.
Don't let
us
take your mind.
Don't let us take it, no.
Fight.
Oh, no.
That your role has come to an end, and you were warm, but I'm on your soul. But you chose to be slick, so your ties won't hold. That's why you got to fight, yeah.
Fight,
yeah.
Don't let them take your mind.
Don't let them take it, don't
fight. Don't let them take your mind.
Behind, trying to take what God gave you, that is your mind. That's why we stand
fight.
Come on and fight, people.
Don't let
us
take your mind.
Don't let us take it,
though. Don't let us take your mind.
Come on and fight, people. Come on and fight, people.
Don't let us take your mind.
Don't let us take it, though.
Yeah.
Come on and fight, people.
Don't let it take your mind.
Don't let it come out.
Fight. Yeah. Don't let it take your mind.
Jesus.
Fight.
Yeah.
Don't let it take your mind.
We got to
fight.